Roto Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix podcast. Dan Bach talks to the biggest personalities in DFS, delivers commentary on the industry's most important topics, and gives you the advice you need to help build winning lineups.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head games, you are just going to lose.
You didn't really think we were going to get rid of that, did you?
Here's your host, the one and only, Dan Bach.
All right, really excited for our guest today. Joining us from ESPN Chalk, he is David Purdom. He covers the gambling beat over at ESPN, and always great talking with him. David, welcome to the podcast, and what a crazy month we've had here. Let's kind of catch everybody up in terms of what exactly happened with the SCOTUS case regarding New Jersey, because the way that sports gaming and gambling looks in this country could be changing pretty quick. So catch us up on that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me again. We had a oral argument in the Supreme Court last Monday, December 4th. It was New Jersey who was attempting to upend the federal ban on legal sports betting in the U.S. The sports leagues who are trying to maintain the status quo for a little bit, at least. There was lots of discussion back and forth. When you left the courtroom, the bulk of the people that I spoke to believe that New Jersey prevailed, that they are a step closer to expanding legalized sports betting in the U.S. So there's a lot of different topics, a lot of different ways that this could play out. But definitely it seems like the momentum is pushing us towards expanded legalized sports betting.
What was the biggest surprise in the actual SCOTUS hearings itself? Because, you know, we pretty much can read the briefs ahead of time. We know what each side is going to argue. But the one thing we don't know is what the justices' thought processes are on it. And we finally kind of get an inkling into that. Were there any moments that were eye-opening and there was... You know, do you think this is something that, because a lot of times we see in Supreme Court cases, it's really divided politically. You know, you've got the conservative side of the court, you've got the more liberal side of the court, and then sometimes it comes down to a couple of swing votes. Do you think that's this? Do you think that applies in this case? And just curious about, you know, if there were moments in that courtroom that, you know, caught the attention of people who were there.
I think it does. There are 5 of the 9 Supreme Court justices were nominated by Republican presidents, 4 remaining were nominated by Democrats. So Republicans, they're big on states' rights, anti-federalism. So that seemed to lean towards New Jersey's case, saying that, hey, we should let the states decide whether we want to offer sports betting or not. The Democrats, there was 3 women on there, and they seemed to be anti this. They just kind of ruffled their nose and thought this was what they call preemption, that the government is allowed to say regulate interstate commerce, and they can take oversee the state's power. So there was that divide. As far as a surprise, one of the biggest surprises to me is that there was no mention of the Oakland Raiders moving to Las Vegas or the NHL putting a franchise in there. I thought that was kind of weird. The environment has changed since this case started. And for those who don't know, New Jersey first tried to do this, started this suit back in 2012. So this has been 5 years of trying to get this done. They finally get it to the Supreme Court. During those 5 years, like I said, we've seen the Raiders, the NFL agree to put a franchise in Las Vegas, seen the Vegas Knights already there. We've seen the rise of daily fantasy and the league's embracement of there. It seems like the environment has changed a little bit. And that wasn't even addressed. It didn't seem to even matter to anybody in the court, on the judges. And I thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned that you know this has been happening since 2012, and my mentality, and we've spoken about this via social media and whatnot, is I just didn't see them picking up this case just to kind of reject it for seemingly like the 4th or 5th time. So I feel like pretty confident that, again, that this is going to kind of change things. But I think we're in a weird spot here, though, because clearly, if they, you know, basically deem PASPA unconstitutional, and let's not guarantee that that's even the process that they're going to go, but let's say they did that, that would really open up the floodgates for states to basically regulate sports betting themselves very quickly, right? Like, as soon as it's pretty much passed down. Like, is that the thought process there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Monmouth Park up in New Jersey says they can be ready within weeks after any kind of favorable ruling to go forward. There are two, basically, outcomes for New Jersey here. The first one, like you said, they could completely strike down this federal ban, and that would allow states to regulate, offer sports betting like they want to. Their other one is a little more tricky, a little more nuanced. It says that New Jersey's recent law it passed that basically decriminalized sports betting, took the state's hands off of it, said it was going to be allowed at the horse tracks and casinos. They could say, okay, this law complies with PASPA. This complies with the federal ban. If you want to decriminalize sports betting and, heck, take a hands-off approach to it, you can do that. Now, I am against that one. I think if this is a big, big deal trying to do something like this, and it's not going to be simple trying to legalize sports betting. So I don't think we should go about it by kind of, you know, a half-hearted approach. We're pretending like we're not regulating. We're pretending like the state's not involved. I don't think anybody wants to see that. So if I had the choice to do it in those two, I would completely strike down PASPA and let the states regulate it appropriately like they want to. Don't let them be scared or worried that, oh, if we get too much involved in this, we're going to get in trouble with PASPA. I think that's foolish.
But you have talked about this plenty, and I agree with it, is that's not necessarily what the leagues, or at least the NBA, want to see. And where are they in this push to try and get a federal framework done? Because, you know, there's always a good back and forth between, you know, Gawker at Legal Sports Report and then you and I kind of on the federal side of things. And he doesn't feel like it's very realistic for it to happen in the short term. But you've had conversations and you've written pieces about the NBA and their desire to make this happen. Where are they on the lobbying front there? And is there any chance that a federal framework could be in place, you know, sooner than we expect, and, you know, basically kind of take the regulation side of sports betting out of the hands of the state and keep it in one centralized spot with the government? What's your kind of thoughts on that?
The NBA is trying. I don't think they have any quote-unquote skin in the game here in terms of lobbying funds. But I was on a panel with Dan Spillane, who is their point person. He's a vice president in the NBA, and he's their point person on gambling. They are working on a bill. They have started legislation, kind of drafting it around. They've been working on it for some time. And they have been talking to people in D.C. He said, no, we have not, you know, officially started lobbying, quote-unquote, but they're planning to. And from my understanding, some of the other leagues are getting ready to at least discuss what's going on here and see what happens in these next couple months before we get a ruling. Because we're not supposed to get a ruling from the Supreme Court until probably the spring, maybe even later into the summer. So, you know, we got some time here. Whether the leagues can have that much influence and get some sort of federal legislation introduced and passed, a tough question. I mean, it's really hard in this political environment we have right now to see, okay, we got health care, we got tax reform, we got immigration issues, but we're going to get sports betting done. That seems a little weird. Who knows, though? You know, if this law is struck down and the leagues aren't exactly happy with how it comes out, I do believe they have some influence at the federal level and may be able to push something through.
But what kind of mess do we get into if we have a hodgepodge of laws? You know, I know that maybe the NBA is being a little bit overdramatic in terms of their feeling about, oh, it's, you know, it's impossible, you can't have this. But you could also have a situation where we do have different regulatory framework in each state, different taxes, and let's face it, like, you could theoretically have it set up where if one state is taking, you know, so much off of every bet that you could have different lines in different states just based on, you know, the, you know, the minus 110 versus, mm-hmm. you know, minus 120 in a different spot versus the getting the other side of that action. I mean, I don't think that's an impossibility to see happen if we have it on a state by state basis, which is interesting because, you know, I mean, normally you don't, you know, you shop around for lines between different sports books. If you're in Vegas, it's not a big deal. If you're online, it's not a big deal. But we could have it where what you're getting in New York could be different than what you're getting in New Jersey, which I think is kind of fascinating.
It is fascinating. I think if you were a, you know, a high-level sports betting syndicate,
yeah,
well, you'd have a guy in New York ready to pounce on if a line was off there. And you'd have a guy in Mississippi, and if they were lopsided on the Mississippi Rebels and they had a lot of money, the line to move there, you could have a guy there. So it would be very interesting. I agree with you that I think it is a little overcautious or overly dramatic in terms of the fear of this hodgepodge of state-by-state regulations. Daily Fantasy is a perfect example. We've had that. You know, I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think is it Massachusetts says you got to be 21, but Virginia you got to be 18 or one of those around there. You know, so those are complications. But, you know, people figure out how to do it. There's different regulations for different things in a lot of states, and people have to figure out how to do it. I think the push for federal framework, I believe the leagues believe that's the best way they could, you know, negotiate some sort of cut, some sort of financial benefit from this. I think they're going to state by state and trying to do that. I think they think that's a much bigger lift, and the likelihood of the state saying, yeah, sure, we'll give you some more money after we already bought you a brand new stadium or whatever is a little less likely.
Okay, I want to talk about what the future is going to look like, though, because, you know, I think the one thing that is fascinating about this is the innovation that could be created on the sports gaming front from what we currently have. I mean, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, but I think the majority of people are betting the point spreads. They're betting the over-unders. But we've seen, you know, Daily Fantasy has created a new type of market for sports gaming in the sense of, like, a lot of people like to pay a little bit amount of money, $5, $10, $20 maybe even, and winning $1 million on a given day. And in the world of sports betting today, we don't really have anything along those lines. I mean, to win $1 million in a parlay, A, they would never pay that much out, and B, you'd have to hit about 35 games. Good luck. So,
right.
Like, what do you expect there to be, you know, major innovations in the whole sports gambling world? Because I think we've already seen a blueprint for what maybe your average person likes to look for. Yeah, maybe I want to bet $5 on the game I'm watching on TV, but ultimately, I think you get bored, you know, winning 450 back. So I'm kind of curious your thoughts.
I think we might see some large-scale survivor-type pools and handicapping contests become more prevalent, especially early on as they're trying to figure out maybe those feel a little more safer to run for the states to begin with. I don't know if you saw, we had a big survivor pool up in New York just this week. Get popped by the feds, $2.5 million in prize money, 23,000 entries. So if we were able to maybe bring those about, we also have the super contest in Las Vegas that you probably heard about, the big NFL handicapping contest. I've always thought, well, gosh, you know, if that could expand nationally, and that's a $1,500 buy-in, but if you made it $10 buy-in and you got as many entries, you know, thousands and thousands of entries, there you go. There's your big pool. And maybe it's a survivor type contest, or maybe it's a handicapping contest where you're seeing how many games you can pick correctly throughout the year and then playing against a big field. So I think those are two of the things. The other thing people always talk about often is the rise of in-game play betting, you know, betting during the game. Will LeBron make this free throw? Will LeBron miss this free throw? Who will commit the next foul, and so forth. That kind of stuff is very popular in the UK. Most people think we will probably follow that kind of evolution following what the UK has done. The problem with those kind of things is where the spot fixing and the match fixing comes into play a lot in soccer, especially. You'll see all kinds of weird bets, who will have the first throw in or who will first get the first yellow card. And that becomes an issue because it's easy to compromise that kind of stuff. And they've seen it in Europe and in other markets where those type of things have been targeted by nefarious people in terms of fixing. So it's going to be very interesting to see how evolution gravitates. I do think that point spread betting, over-under betting, that's not going away. No. That's still going to be the most prominent form of it, but there will be some new interesting things.
Yeah, and I hope we, you know, I just think we're just so ripe for new innovation on that front, and I hope that, you know, the big worry that I have as well is, you know, whether the states do it, whether it's a federal framework, you know, can we do these from our smartphones? Do we need to walk into a dog track or a horse track or a casino to make a wager? Do you have a feeling about where that direction is going? Because I think it's an important one. And, you know, we know that lawmakers sometimes are slow to, you know, evolve to the times. But, I mean, let's face it, if you're going to do it, if you're going to regulate sports betting, you should do it right and realize that everything is happening on phones and mobile, and it's not brick and mortar anymore. Do you suspect, though, that the brick and mortar entities are going to lobby to make it exclusively through them? What's your kind of thought? What's your thoughts on that?
No, I do not think that the casinos, other than maybe Sheldon Adelson, who's obviously a big force, but most of them agree with you that this is headed online ultimately. Do we wait and we kind of, you know, tippy toe toward it, or do we just go ahead and do it? There's been a lot of the what they're calling placeholder bills that some of the states have passed. These bills will give them the ability to legalize sports betting if the federal ban is lifted. Some of those include online mentions, some of them don't. But the general theory or the belief among stakeholders is that ultimately it's getting online. How fast we want to get there, that's another subject, but you're right. It needs to get there. It seems silly to start anywhere else. Tracking this online, again, I was on a panel. Jason Robbins was on that panel from DraftKings with me with the NBA guy. He talked about the ability, you know, to track all the data through there and how that is the best way to protect the integrity of the game. You know more about a customer who bets on his mobile phone than you do the guy that walks up to the counter. And I think people are starting to realize that, and hopefully, I just think it would be foolish to even try to control this in a brick-and-mortar type environment.
I never even really thought of it from that side of things, but you're 100% right. Like, that makes a ton more sense in terms of regulation. Let's talk a little bit about the DFS implications of this. You mm-hmm. said Jason was on that panel, and I think it wasn't not that long ago he finally kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, if the laws in this state change, that, you know, we potentially could, you know, adjust ourselves over at DraftKings. What do you think happens at the DFS sites in regards to sports betting?
I think they partner with sportsbooks. I don't know if they'll install their own software and run their own sportsbook, but you've seen Paddy Power, the big Irish sportsbook, you know, take a share of Draft. I think the other big sites, daily fantasy sites, will probably end up in some sort of partnership where they have a sports book and you can play traditional sports betting there. And then they have a fantasy, you know, site that you can play fantasy sports there. I think the business model for traditional sports betting is a little more clear than daily fantasies is. You know, people are still trying to figure out how to turn a profit on fantasy. I think they're headed in that direction and starting to figure it out, but it's been a while. And I think they see sports betting as more of a clear cut. Hey, this business model is clear cut. This works. This is how we do it. So it won't surprise me at all if a DraftKings or a FanDuel ends up partnering, even maybe being acquired by a major sports book, maybe like a Betfair. Gets into the game, because I do think that we're going to see more of these newer companies get a jump start on some of this stuff. You know, like I mentioned Betfair, they are a big sports exchange in the UK. They moved into the US and offer horse racing exchange where you can bet on. I think they're going to be a big player eventually. We mentioned Paddy Power. They're already coming on board. You know, you got several newer companies that aren't just your Caesars or your MGMs that are looking to get involved here. And I think that's, you're going to see that play out, and I think Daily Fantasy will be right there in the mix of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, FanDuel is already making major moves on the management front, and you know, seems to be trimming down, you know, the fat. And usually, you do those things when you know you're prepping to maybe fall into some sort of acquisition. And you know, they still, you know, are still running big tournaments week to week. Clearly, DraftKings has passed them by. But, you know, I think, like, you nailed it, though. What are the two things, or what's the one thing that FanDuel and DraftKings have that would be incredibly valuable to somebody who wanted to start up an online sports betting business? It's millions of accounts. You know, they've acquired millions upon millions of people who have set up accounts already, who are comfortable putting money on the internet, who are comfortable, you know, and are eager to watch sports and put money on an outcome. I mean, that has already been proven right there. I think those, that factor alone carries so much value for those companies, because we know customer acquisition costs these days, they're, you know, that's the one thing that FanDuel and DraftKings really, you know, that's where their money has gone over the last 5-6 years. If you had somebody already do most of your heavy lifting on that front, I mean, man, that's my sales pitch.
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed, took the words out of my mouth when you say consumer acquisition. They've already got it. You partner with them, and you don't have to acquire anymore. They just transfer them over there. It'll be interesting to see how many daily fantasy players do decide to play sports, traditional sports betting. I've always believed that there is a crossover. Some people have said there isn't, but I've seen studies both ways. So I do think there will be some crossover. I do not believe that daily fantasy by any means is going away.
No.
When I hear people talk about sports betting will crush that, I don't see that. I think there is a passionate, large community that enjoys building rosters and the different strategy elements with daily fantasy. Will they jump all come play traditional sports betting too? They could, they might. We'll just kind of have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and I think I summed it up earlier when I said, you know, the design of daily fantasy games is just still really attractive to somebody who, you know, wants to spend a little bit of money and maybe win a lot on a given day. And I still love, you know, the one thing that I am so passionate about in the daily fantasy side of things is the peer-to-peer aspect, where I still view, you know, people always scoff at skill game, laugh at skill game, but it is ultimately still me versus you. If we're playing in a contest or we're playing in a 10-man contest, me versus the other 9 guys, it's not me versus a centralized sports book. Now, you know, that's something that I think there is still a lot of desire around. And that's where I feel like, even on like the sports betting front, like I feel like, you know, you talked about betting exchanges and stuff. If there's a way to set a greater peer-to-peer aspect within sports betting, I think that would be an incredibly fun and interesting kind of concept as well. Because I do think that, you know, people are being smarter about things, especially with that they put their money on. If they feel like I'm smarter than the other guy opposite of me, you know, they're more willing to play, I think, as opposed to necessarily playing against, you know, the sharpest line in the world, where only a handful of people are really winners in the long term anyway. So I don't know. I think it's really fascinating to see. And you know, we've already seen some movement on the content front. And that's the last part I want to kind of talk to you about, because you follow, you know, syndicates, you know, you're in with, you know, a lot of the different people who are, you know, central figures in sports betting. And, you know, we saw, you know, the Chernin Group come up with the Action Network. We've seen VSiN out there in Las Vegas. It feels like there's a lot of posturing here on the content front. And it's obviously a content company in the daily fantasy space. There's a lot of demand for content when people are, you know, putting their money on making decisions. So what do you think the future is of that in general?
You know, what is the business model? What is it, an affiliate model for these new companies that are coming in? Or do they plan, when legalized sports betting, to set up some sort of affiliate agreement with a regulated sports book? And, you know, any customer that they push towards that sports book, they get a cut. That model has been gone over and over throughout gambling. You've seen it in fantasy as well. It's worked and it's not worked. So I go back to what is the business model here? Because, you know, the media industry is not certainly booming, I wouldn't say. You know, newspapers have really been hit hard over the last 10 years. It's not easy to make money off a website with, you know, content sharing or a advertising type affiliate agreement. So I think everybody is still trying to figure it out and see, you know, well, how do we make money off this? Now, I say that as, you know, by far not the sharpest business acumen out there. there's a lot of people who are very interested in this, and you see them gravitating towards the industry. So there's obviously some sort of attraction to doing that. But again, I just want to see somebody to lay it out for me. Okay, sports betting is legalized. I have a website that covers sports betting and covers fantasy sports. How does this make me money? And I'm just not sure that I've been completely sold on how that happens.
Yeah, that's for the smart people to figure out. And maybe not you and I, but the smarter people can figure that out. But they're, you know, when you've got, it's, I think it's a numbers game. You know, I think they look at it and be like, wow, there's going to be how many more millions of people now who are completely engaged for a certain specific reason. They're going to want content, you know, for that interest. How do we monetize that content? And that's why, you know, there's smart people out there trying to figure it out. But there's definitely going to be a market for it. There's no question. It's just, like you say, what's the model around it? And we're already kind of seeing, you know, people make their moves in it. And I think we're going to see that accelerated dramatically here in the next, you know, 8 to 10 months. I mean, because I remember, too, you know, the early days of Daily Fantasy, it was like us and that was it, you know, and then a few more started to pop up. And then all of a sudden there were like 50 overnight that were kind of doing what we were doing. So clearly, you know, that there's going to be an oversaturation, I think, of the market at some point in time. But it's also like weird, too, because sports betting is different in the sense of like Daily Fantasy. When we play our lineups, you can see our lineups in the tournaments we play. You can see our success or failures as we play. You know, there's kind of always been this weird feeling around the tout world of sports betting because where's the accountability of it? Like, there's no tracking of how players are doing. There's you know, people aren't showing everyone their bets every single week. And even though it's not perfect in Daily Fantasy, it still can be there. I can see, you know, on a given week on DraftKings, you know, how somebody did in the Millie Maker tournament or how they did in a high stakes tournament. But there is none of that in sports betting. And I think that's a little bit of a difference because you can look at the track record of guys in DFS and say, you know, it's worth subscribing. You know, they're good. You know, their information's working for me. But in sports betting, you still like, how do we know really who's good and who's not in this world? And that's something I find interesting.
It's very scary. I mean, I have covered the tout industry for quite a long time, and there's been just horror stories of these, you know, people, the unscrupulous boiler room type people who are just flipping coins. They will tell you, we just flip a coin and we give this side, this one side, one side. The thing I would ask for anybody that is trying to sell picks, quote unquote, is to provide analysis. If you can provide good analysis and I can read your analysis for your selection and at least note that you put in the time and that you are knowledgeable and you have the data behind your pick to give it some sort of legitimacy, then I'm okay with it. I mean, I'm a writer. I want you to read my content. I'm selling you my content. If you're trying to sell content for picks, provide the analysis behind it. Do not just throw out picks. And that bugs me really bad. It is very...
Well, I got bad news for you. I got really bad news for you. Because if this becomes nationwide, it's going to be everywhere out there. And you're going to... It's you know, that's one of my big fears on this whole thing is what that world is going to turn into. Because there's going to be people who just get constantly bombarded with, you know, with their picks, emails and texts and everything else. I mean, I got a buddy who does it, you know, behind closed doors, and he continually, you know, tells me about his guy pushing picks on him, this and that. And it's, if you think it's bad now, just wait when this thing gets scaled even larger. It's scary.
Man, let's just, anybody that is listening, do not fall into that trap. You know, if you are going to pay for information and pay for picks, it needs to be appropriate to your bankroll. Because first of all, if I'm paying $100 for a pick and I'm only betting $500, well, I have to now suddenly have to win a lot higher percentage. You know, to beat the 110 big, you have to 52.3% of your wins. You have to pick those correctly. So if I throw another $100 into that, gosh, that jumps up to 55%, 57%, 60%. And it's almost bordering on impossible to do that. So just please be careful, people, if you are going to buy picks.
It's going to be an interesting world, and it's going to change a lot. And how do you think, like, last thing, how do you think this whole sports betting, like, world, which I believe is going to take place, how that's going to transform the experience of, like, watching games themselves? I mean, I'm somewhat sheltered. I've never been to the UK. I don't know how prevalent, you know, gambling is spoken about or discussed or, you know, mentioned on screen with soccer matches and whatnot out there. But is this something that's going to proliferate the actual broadcasts and, you know, the delivering of the games themselves here in the U.S.?
I'm going to say I don't think it's going to be much more increased than it is now. You already see the point spread scrolling across the bottom of the ESPN ticker. 3-4 years ago, we definitely didn't see that. It's more frequently recognized during broadcasts from broadcasters. Some are still kind of do it tongue-in-cheek, and others are more open about it. So I think you will probably see some announcers be more open about it. Will we have a running thing on the side of the screen that says, bet this game, bet this here, bet this here? I've heard that sometimes those are available in the UK and so forth. I don't see us jumping immediately to that. I don't think that's probably necessary, really. So I kind of hope that it doesn't get to that point where there's, you know, you can bet from right off your TV screen and the people are encouraging you to bet and do this and this. I don't know if that's the best approach going forward. Australia is a good example. In the 2000s, they legalized sports betting nationally. Mm-hmm. They had this rash of advertising. The biggest bookmaker in Australia suddenly was an announcer for the rugby down there. You know, and it was kind of weird. They had some issues with. They had some spikes in addiction to gambling with Australia. So, you know, while I do think legalizing sports betting is a net win here, there are some negatives that will come out of it, and we need to be very cognizant of this, and that includes the advertising and how we approach it during the day when kids are watching games and so forth. So let's just be smart, pragmatic about it, sensitive to it, and see how it goes forward.
Well, David Purdom, you can read him over at ESPN, covers the gambling beat over there, and a must-follow over on Twitter whenever news breaks regarding the world of gambling. He has it. Thank you so much, David. Always appreciate your insight. Good chatting, and I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
Dan, can we leave the audience with one thing that I know they're interested in? Why did we have to do this at 9 instead of 10 today?
We had to do it at 9, admittedly, because I have to buy Taylor Swift tickets for my wife at 10. I know, it's legitimately... like one of the more sad things that, you know, my existence has become is having to do things like this. But yeah, you know, it's not, my audience doesn't understand. There's a bunch of guys out there who are like, what are they talking about? But then the wonderful thing is there are a handful like you and I, David, who can fully accept it and be like, you know what? Gotta do what you gotta do. Gotta do what you
yes,
gotta
you do.
Thanks
amen.
Again, David.
Good luck on the phone with the ticket.
Awesome, man. Thanks, man.
Yeah.